Do you struggle with how to pray? The Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January is A Simple Way to Pray. It's written by Martin Luther and translated by Matt Harrison. A Simple Way to Pray costs less than $2 plus shipping and handling. You can browse before you buy at issuesetc.org, or you can purchase A Simple Way to Pray by calling Concordia Publishing House 1-800-325-3040. A Simple Way to Pray, the Issues Etc. Book of the Month for January. I'm no scientist, and it confuses me. I try my best to understand things that are above me when it comes to the amount of study and research that people have done. And yet, it's not just science. It's not just knowing the knowledge that science can bring to us. Science in itself is a tremendous gift. It is an application of human reason to the world around us, and it's absolutely necessary and benefits us in many ways. But it needs to be understood in an ethical framework, medical science and the biological sciences especially. Joining us to talk about medical ethics, bioethics, Dr. Gilbert Mailander. He holds the Duesenberg Chair in Christian Ethics at Valparaiso University. He's a former member of the President's Council on Bioethics, and he's author of an article in the Lutheran Witness magazine titled Bios and Biology. Dr. Mailander, welcome back to Issues Etc.
Thank you.
I'm certain you've heard this question before, and it's often an objection raised against the entire discipline of bioethics. What do ethicists, what business do they have telling scientists what they can and can't do? Aren't they impeding the advancement of science and research?
Well, yeah, I have heard it often. The truth is that bioethics hasn't, on many occasions, hasn't impeded progress of science very much at all, maybe not as much as it should have tried to. But I think that there's actually nothing very surprising about bioethics raising questions about what science does. Scientists themselves have raised those questions. It's scientists often who have worried about abuses in research, for instance, and have placed curbs on it, and bioethicists are simply doing the same thing. Now, of course, on any particular issue, there may be conflict between what some bioethicists think is right and the limits that they think should be placed on what science does and what some particular group of researchers think. But I don't think there's some kind of general conflict between bioethics and science, or that we should be surprised that on some occasions bioethics places certain kinds of limits. It's the most natural thing in the world.
What's the difference between medical ethics and bioethics?
Well, it's not clear that there is a big difference. The two terms are certainly often used interchangeably in our world. Medical ethics is the older term and no doubt has as its focus a little more the clinical practice of medicine. Bioethics is a term that came into use only within, say, the last half century or so. It is used in ways that often are a little broader than the term medical ethics, so that it will include concerns that clearly fall under a term like medical ethics, issues in the clinical relation between physician and patient. But bioethics can include things like research on other animal species, which one would not ordinarily include under medical ethics. So it has a somewhat broader scope, has become a little more technical term in some ways, but the two are also often used in overlapping ways.
We often think of it in terms of cutting-edge research, and I'm thinking here about human stem cell research and things like that. But does bioethics also include kind of the less flashy, the less sexy parts of medical research and scientific research? Just kind of the everyday nuts and bolts of how a researcher or a scientist might go about their task?
Oh, sure. And it's just that they're... when you get out of an area that is so obviously controversial, there's far less to notice because there's far less likelihood of sort of clashing perspectives on it. But almost all research, certainly all research that is federally funded in this country, is governed by restrictions that are in place. There are institutional review boards that have to approve research proposals and so forth, so that researchers are not kind of freelance specialists. I mean, it is true that if you can get your own, entirely your own private funding, you'll probably be freer of various kinds of regulations. But so much of our research is government-funded that there are always going to be a number of sort of limits and controls that are placed on it.
Talk about, if you would, the task of the bioethicist in kind of getting the basic information to the public, helping to raise public understanding of the scientific issues that often are ethically probable.
Well, whether I'm a good person to talk about that or not, I don't know. I mean, I don't think there's any sort of single helpful way to accomplish that. Bioethics has become, over time, something like an academic discipline so that people can study it and take courses in it, and in that sense, the public can be educated about a whole range of issues that fall within the category of bioethics. Bioethicists certainly write not only technical kinds of pieces for each other, but write pieces that are aimed at a wider public. I mean, probably the most well-known, the oldest bioethics journal is the Hastings Center Report, and it's always aimed at a somewhat wider readership than just fellow bioethicists, though some of the pieces will be pretty technical. So there are a range of ways that this happens, but I don't think that there's any single way that it can best be done.
And then if you would discuss the political dimension, it's inevitable. I don't know if it's
sure.
Absolutely always helpful, but the political dimension of bioethics, how would you describe it?
Well, I think there are several different political dimensions to it, and you're right that there's no getting away from it, at least in our world. In one sense, there will always be a political dimension to certain kinds of issues that are highly controverted. I mean, you mentioned the stem cell research issue earlier. And at least insofar as any research contemplated of that sort was going to be federally funded, all citizens whose taxes are providing those federal funds have an obvious stake and interest in the issue, and there are going to be serious disagreements about some issues like that. So that's one way in which a kind of intersection with the political realm just inevitably takes place, certain issues that are highly disputed in our society. More generally, I mean, one of the issues that's maybe less a single focus, but that is obviously political and that falls within the realm of bioethics, just has to do with what we can call the allocation of healthcare resources, how we pay for healthcare, how we distribute it and allocate it and so forth. That, of course, has been a highly controversial political subject in our country in recent years. Not clear that there is a good answer to the question. It's not clear that we've found one, but that's a political question that will never go away.
Why is it that bioethics has of late, and it does have a very short history, you're quite right, but why of late has it focused so much on, as you say, issues having to do with our coming into and going out of existence?
Well, I wouldn't say that it's just of late that it's done that. I think that those issues have been there from the start. I mean, those issues were part of medical ethics from the beginning. I mean, one thing physicians always did was they dealt with the beginning and the end of life. And from the time bioethics began to develop in this country, say in the mid to late 1960s, those issues having to do with beginning and end of life were always one of the sorts of issues, not the only thing, but one of the sorts of issues that bioethics dealt with. And again, I don't think we should be surprised by that. Those are issues that are close to everyone's life experience. None of us will be untouched by them. Even if we have no philosophical inclinations whatsoever, we're going to end up having to think about those questions and sometimes be puzzled by them. And they can raise complicated questions about what a human being is, how we understand our place in the world, and so forth. So that I think that those issues have been pretty near the center of bioethics and will continue to be.
We'll take a break when we come back. We're talking about medical ethics with Dr. Gilbert Mailander of Valparaiso University. I'm curious, as a bioethicist, what grade would he give our lawmakers on their general knowledge and understanding of these important bioethical issues in the U.S.? We'll get his answer to that question right after this.
Would you like to share something you've heard on Issues Etc. via email, Facebook, Twitter, or text message? We've made it easy for you. Just go to the Listen On Demand page of our website, issuesetc.org, and click Share This. You'll find almost 50 ways to share Issues Etc. audio. We love our on-demand listeners. Old Theology, New Technology, issuesetc.org. Go to the Listen On Demand page and click Share This.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Thanks to the following congregations for standing with us by joining the Issues Etc. 300. St. John Lutheran, Springfield, Pennsylvania. Zion Lutheran, Detroit, Michigan. St. Paul's Lutheran, Long Beach, California. All Saints Lutheran, Charlotte, North Carolina. Redeemer Lutheran, Colorado Springs, Colorado. Shepherd of the Lake Lutheran, Garrison, Minnesota. Emmanuel Lutheran, Kansas City, Missouri. And Holy Cross Lutheran, St. Genevieve, Missouri. Find out how your church can support this worldwide outreach by including Issues Etc. in your mission or advertising budget. Just go to our website, issuesetc.org, and click support. When your congregation joins the Issues Etc. 300, we'll advertise your congregation on the radio, at our website, and in the Issues Etc. journal. issuesetc.org, click support. The Issues Etc. 300. The Epiphany Hymn, The People That in Darkness Sat, sung by the Children's Choirs of St. Paul's Lutheran Church in Fort Wayne, Indiana, playing right now at LutheranPublicRadio.org. It's Sacred Music for the World, our 24-hour sacred music station. And as you note, during the Epiphany season, it has Epiphany music from the church, and in the other seasons of the church year, music appropriate to those seasons as well, following the church year at LutheranPublicRadio.org. Dr. Gilbert Mailander is our guest. We're talking about medical ethics. Dr. Mailander, what grade would you give our lawmakers, especially at the national level here in the U.S., as an ethics professor, on their knowledge and their understanding of bioethical questions and issues?
I don't know if I'm really able to answer that. Because to give them a grade in general would be to grade a bunch of people who whose views I just haven't heard. You know, I haven't read their papers. I think that when I do hear them, you know, particular ones, they get remarkably different grades. Some seem to me to be pretty knowledgeable. Others say sort of things that are astonishingly inaccurate sometimes. So I don't think I can. I'd be inclined to give some sort of general grade. You know, different people would get different grades, which I suppose is really as it should be.
How do you respond when you do hear our lawmakers say, well, you know, I'm no expert in this. I kind of leave that, let's leave that question, one that's obviously an ethical question, to scientists? How do you respond
to that? Well, that I think is a mistaken understanding of what they're there for. They're elected precisely because there have to be people whom we hold responsible on these matters. And those who are not elected, finally, you know, we cannot hold them responsible in the same way. So if you want to hold public office, you have to be ready to deal with these questions, as far as I'm concerned. Now, it's perfectly true that in the 50 years or so that bioethics has been around, lawmakers have often been, legislators and executive branch both, have often been happy to have bioethics bodies or regulators or whatever to kind of shove these questions off on so that they don't have to deal with them. But it's a mistake as far as I'm concerned.
What do you think is the least well understood big bioethical question today?
Well, I imagine, though this is, I'm not doing anything more than speculating here, I imagine that some of the issues involved in our new genetic capacities are not well understood. What we're on the what we're able to do in terms of the genetic makeup of human beings, what we may be on the cusp of being able to do, then those are fairly complicated questions, and there's certainly things about them that I don't understand. But I mean, I think the public has a kind of general interest in them, but probably doesn't understand that much about what's actually going on.
What would you put at the top of your list as bioethical concerns that both professional ethicists or lawmakers, the general public, ought to be concerned and knowledgeable about?
Well, I'm not sure what should be at the very top, but we should, although it's not as jazzy sounding as some other things, we should certainly be concerned about certain kinds of end-of-life issues, how best to care for people who are aging, what our attitude toward aging ought to be, how we ought to deal with the inevitable debilities that accompany old age in many cases, because these are going to be issues that occupy more and more of our attention and our resources in the coming years. And it's not clear that we have very good answers to some of those questions. So although that's not a particularly jazzy question, I might be inclined to put that at the very top. It's not as jazzy, for instance, as some of the issues about using our new genetic knowledge to enhance human capacities in various ways and so forth, but it's something that kind of cuts closer to the lives of an awful lot of people.
Are we, I sense that you are saying there in some way that we are just demographically headed for an encounter with that question in a way that perhaps, at least in the American experience, we've never had to deal with before.
I think that's right. We are, and we just don't know what. In part, we don't know kind of what to do about some of the issues that arise. And apart from those substantive questions, they're just serious questions about whether we have the resources really to deal with it. So yeah, I mean the demographics are pretty overpowering.
Two final questions for you, Dr. Mailander. The first one: how is it that someone with a not only a Christian but also a distinctively Lutheran way of approaching theology and life is uniquely suited, or perhaps what is it about Lutheran theology that really does help in the realm of bioethics?
Well, this one would take a longer answer. It sort of pulls my chain in some ways. I think that the aspects of Lutheran theology that are most useful in bioethics are not things that are particularly unique to Lutherans. They are aspects that Lutherans share with a larger Catholic, small c, tradition of the Church. And I think, in fact, one of the reasons that Lutherans have often not made very substantial contributions in some of these areas is that we keep going around looking for something uniquely Lutheran rather than understanding ourselves as part of that larger tradition. And I think it's the basic themes of that tradition with respect to Christian understanding of creation and redemption that are most important for and most helpful for bioethics. So what Lutherans ought to do is think of themselves as sharers in that larger Christian tradition and try to think within it.
In that vein, do you think my sense is, having dealt with these issues purely from kind of a media standpoint for the last decade plus, and talking to some people in your field, including yourself of some prominence, Robbie George and others, that maybe the very best bulwark that we have in the bioethics field is kind of the Catholic moral theology. They seem to have a very carefully thought out moral theology that has had a long history and is often really includes the very best of both Christian theology and natural law. Do we do well as we approach these inevitable bioethical questions to listen to Roman Catholic thinking on a lot of these things? They've been thinking these things through for a long, long time.
Oh, yes, they have. And sometimes you beat your head against it and realize that they were there long before you. So, sure, I think that we should pay attention to them and learn from them and work with them. Though Roman Catholicism is a big umbrella, and there are a lot of different views that can be found underneath that umbrella, but yes, I would agree with that. Though I think my more general point was that the Catholic tradition with a small lowercase c is more than Roman Catholicism, and that Lutherans have a claim on that Catholic tradition ourselves. It's ours, and we belong to it. And so one of the things that anybody who takes that seriously would do is try to learn from Roman Catholicism. But, you know, the tradition is more than just Roman Catholics as well.
And an example, I was recently responding to a listener who had a question about Pope Paul VI's Humana Vitae, human life encyclical, that was issued, my goodness, you know, more than 40 years ago, almost 50 years ago. And I was struck by reading through that, how forward-thinking it was in matters that we are now dealing with that some of us haven't even been paying attention to until the last 20 years or so. What are your thoughts there?
Oh, I think that's right. As I said, that sometimes you beat your head on certain issues and realize that Roman Catholicism was there before you. Now, I say that without endorsing entirely some of the most controversial conclusions of Humanae Vitae. That was the big, important encyclical on contraception, and I think got it wrong to some degree on that. But still, it's a tradition of, it's a very sophisticated tradition of moral theology with a long memory.
Finally, then, you formerly served on the President's Council for Bioethics. How do you think the current administration is handling bioethical questions?
I don't think it's very high on their radar screen, as far as I can tell. The current administration did form a new body, a Presidential Commission for the Study of Bioethics, which has undertaken several projects and issued several reports. The aim of that body was to be much more a public policy kind of body, recommending public policies. That's quite different from what the President's Council on Bioethics that I served on tried to do. I actually think that it's a mistake for bodies like that to think of themselves primarily as public policy bodies. They're not elected. Nobody holds them responsible. I mean, that relates to something we talked about earlier. I think it's better for them to sort of study issues more broadly and try to think them through and help us think about them. And then people whom we've elected and whom we can hold responsible ought to have to make decisions.
So with only about 30 seconds, it sounds like what you're saying is a bioethics council, however it's comprised, really has no business in making public policy, specific public policy recommendations.
Well, that's probably a little too strong. It can, on certain occasions, make such recommendations. I think to understand that as its primary task would be a mistake.
Dr. Gilbert Mailander holds the Duesenberg Chair in Christian Ethics at Valparaiso University. He's a former member of the President's Council on Bioethics, and he's author of an article in the Lutheran Witness magazine titled Bios and Biology. Dr. Mailander, thank you very much for being our guest.
Thank you.
Tomorrow on Issues Etc., we'll continue our series on the historical liturgy. Pastor Will Whedon will be our guest. We're going to talk about the hymns that are often sung during the distribution of the Lord's Supper. We'll also find out what Dr. Russell Moore of Southern Baptist Seminary thinks about Time Magazine's cover story on the 40th anniversary of Roe v. Wade. The beginning of the year is a great time to start to support the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. If you're a member of Thrivent Financial for Lutherans, they have their Thrivent Choice program that allows you to designate charitable dollars to various entities. We would like Lutheran Public Radio and Issues Etc. to be one of them. Go to our website, issuesetc.org. Click Donate. You'll find the Thrivent logo there, and when you click on that, you'll see everything you need to know about designating your Thrivent Choice dollars to Lutheran Public Radio and thereby supporting the worldwide outreach of Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. I'll talk with you tomorrow. Thanks for listening to Issues Etc.
Listen weekday afternoons to Pastor Todd Wilkin and guests on Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is vital for the continuation and expansion of this worldwide outreach. Our mailing address, Lutheran Public Radio, P.O. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. Box 912, Collinsville, Illinois, 62234. You can also donate at our website, issuesetc.org. Issues Etc. is a production of LPR, Lutheran Public Radio.
Apostles Lutheran Church is in Melrose Park, Illinois. We invite you to our divine service, which is held every Sunday at 9:15. Please contact us at 847-455-0903 or check out our website at apostlesmelrosepark.org. We are located just south of O'Hare Airport, where airplanes are continually going up. Here at Apostles, we glory in the one who on the cross was lifted up. for the sins of the world.
Did you know that we send out an email each week that details upcoming show topics? It's available for you to include in your weekly church bulletin. Just click the logo for the Issues Etc. Journal and Weekly Bulletin insert at issuesetc.org and sign up to receive the Church Bulletin blurb. It's an easy way to invite your fellow parishioners to listen to Issues Etc. Issuesetc.org, look for the Issues Etc. Journal logo, and register to receive a weekly bulletin paragraph from Issues Etc.